Welcome to The Giving Nook, where nonprofit leaders, fundraisers, foundations, and philanthropists come to talk all things giving and impact.
We're your guest hosts. I'm Katie Lord.
And I'm Chris Stibbs.
Your nonprofit powerhouses, fundraising strategists, and your go-to guides for tips, tricks, and real talk about what it actually takes to create meaningful change in the sector.
Between the two of us, we've worked across every corner of the sector, from throwing top-notch events to building donor relationships that last. And now we're pulling back the curtain to share what we've learned.
Whether you're in the fundraising trenches, leading a nonprofit, or just curious about how to give more intentionally, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
You know, Katie, that I have been dying to talk about this topic, and it is events.
Dun, dun, dun. I mean, this is like your, I'm excited to learn from you. This is your lane. This is something that I just know you like shine so much in. So I'm excited to have this conversation with you and especially get some of your wisdom out to our listeners today because they're in for a real treat.
It's going to be mostly here's everything I learned not to do and don't do it.
Well, excellent. So where do you feel events are today as opposed to 5 years ago?
You know, COVID was awful, but coming out of COVID, people were ready to be back at events. I mean, you could have told me, like, I need to go to, like, a school fundraiser where there's nothing to drink and there's no food. And I would have been like, I'm ready. Sign me up. When do I need to be there? But I think we're getting back into the motion of pre-COVID where people are like, I have another gala I have to go to this weekend. And I think people are getting tired again. They're tired of these cookie cutter events that feel like they're the same and they leave not knowing what the mission is or what the call to action is. And it's just getting a little stale. Mm-hmm. And one of my, you know, favorite things to say is like your fundraising event isn't dead. It's just boring. And I think it's a little harsh. And I've been there. I've been there when I've put on the boring event. So I get it. It's, you know, you have minimal staff to put on this event. You're trying to do the best you can. You know, you're wearing multiple hats. But we've got to change up these events. We've got to make them unique. My first takeaway, I'm going to start out really early, is if you don't already have a gala, do not create a gala.
Oh, gosh, you just spoke to me right there. Yes, please. Like, I am so, like, I get the fundraising offensives, you know, like when people are like, oh, are you guys throwing a rubber chicken dinner? It's like, no, mine's better than that. But sometimes they're not, you know, like I've thrown a couple of events where, like you said, where you're just like, that did not hit the way it used to or how I thought it was going to. And I would say that I think those, especially younger generations coming up, like we don't want our grandparents' gala. We want something new. But Chris, how do you get a board or even a boss to buy into something that is new, that's not the tried and true, and let go of that fear of like, but what if we don't hit our number?
You know, it kind of plays into the segment we had before about desk fundraising. You have to build these relationships. You have to be out there. You have to build the relationships. You've got to ingrain your mission in the people that you meet and do it in a way that really speaks to them. You know, when we go out and we talk about why this is important and why they're investing in it, you know, there's no event, there's no committee, there's no fundraising if you haven't built those relationships with people to step into those roles. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I talk about is you can't just send a sponsorship letter out to 100 companies that either don't know you or don't already support you or don't have an employee involved with you and just expect them to be like, yeah, here's 10 grand.
Why not? Isn't that how it used to be?
You know.
I mean, I totally agree with you on that. And I think, you know, yes, it goes back to desk fundraising, but it also goes into, I think sometimes it's getting the right volunteers on board too. And I will say, like, you do an excellent job of getting those volunteers. In fact, I get annoyed maybe once or twice when I'm like, I'd love for you to, and they're like, I volunteer with Chris. I'm like, of course you do. But don't you think that going into those relationships, like sometimes I think we're afraid to ask our volunteers to do more. Mm-hmm. because we're a little bit afraid of maybe losing control, but you seem to do that well. So how can you kind of maintain what the event is about, tell the story, keep its integrity, if you will, but give people and your volunteers the wiggle room to try new things and create new ideas within a structured event?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've learned, and I've learned because I was not always doing this, is you have to be direct with your committee members and your volunteers on what you need from them. They can't read your mind. You know, one of the things I talk with new committee members about when they're interested in joining our event committee is, are you comfortable fundraising? Are you comfortable inviting people to be at this event that may contribute in many different ways? That does not mean every person is going to be a $10,000 fund to need donor. And are you comfortable, you know, getting auction items or donations as a part of this event? And if they're like, yeah, I'm okay with that, then I'm like, perfect, here's a spot. And if they're like, you know what, that's not my interest and I don't really want to do that, then I'm like, here are other ways you can be involved with this event without mm-hmm. being on the committee. Maybe it's volunteering the night of the event to check mm-hmm. people in. Maybe it's dropping, you know, auction items off after, you know, everybody wins items and leaves them behind because they had a lot of fun at the gala. Dropping them off that next week. You know, it's putting people in a spot where they're comfortable and where they feel useful, because that's what's going to make them come back. And I think really building these committees where people understand the assignment is what is moving these events forward. Mm-hmm. So you just got to build those relationships and be direct with your committee members and your volunteers and people who are wanting to engage, so that you're getting them in the right role.
Clear is kind. That's one of my new favorite phrases, is clear is kind. And giving people permission to say no, kind of like what you said, I think we need to sometimes give people permission to say no and say, that's not the role that I see myself in, and then co-create that role that can create, that can cause someone on the committee to maybe shine and be the most successful. Maybe it's not going out and asking those sponsors or for those auction items, but it is still something that they can shine in that maybe brings a new kind of element to the event.
Yeah. Well, and give your volunteers and committee members and chairs a media toolkit. Here is a media toolkit that has sample emails, social media posts, statistics about us, graphics, everything they need to make the ask. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we do with our committee members is, hey, if, you know, fundraising is maybe not something you're super, super comfortable with, let's work together to come up with a plan on how we approach XYZ company. Mm-hmm. Okay, you make the intro, include me, and I'll reach out and say, hey, you know, Todd, I would love to sit down and chat with you more about this event and our agency in general, and talk about ways that maybe we could be involved. And recognize that, yes, XYZ company may not end up being a sponsor of your event, but maybe they're looking for somewhere for their team to come volunteer next month, and you've started to build that relationship with them. Mm-hmm. It's not always going to take you directly to a sponsorship at your event, but in so many ways, we have to cultivate the relationship.
And it's a marathon, not a sprint. I think sometimes something that I know that I can probably do better, and I think a lot of event committees could do better, is letting people know what happened, even if it wasn't a sponsorship. So it's kind of like, oh, we didn't get the sponsorship and I don't know what happened with the nonprofit, but maybe we got 10 volunteers. Maybe we got a grant because they have a grants committee mm-hmm. that gives out money. Maybe we got an auction item, or we got something that just maybe wasn't what the end result was. What do you do about that? Like, how do you communicate that impact to people if it's not maybe the most tangible of what they were set out to do originally?
I think kind of exactly what you just said, like showing, you know, our committees and our teams, like at the nonprofit, like here are some areas that we built impact outside of this event because of the relationship we created. Mm-hmm. So XYZ company didn't come in as a sponsor, but they shared with us their grant program, and we were able to apply for a $25,000 grant through their company versus this $5,000 sponsorship we were asking for. Mm-hmm. And we've also had these experiences where we're going to funders and it's like they've got a grant program and they've got a sponsorship program and you can only do one.
Ooh.
And I have been graceful and thought about the, you know, team as a whole. Like, this grant was going to be 20 grand. My sponsorship was going to be $2,500. And I'm like, I know that this 20 grand grant is way more impactful to us than this $2,500 sponsor. Yeah. And so it's being willing to pivot, as much as we hate that word after COVID, into what makes most sense for the company and the organization.
And that goes back to what you said earlier, which was about fundraising really is a team, and there is that accountability that you said last time. Something else that I think is really important for us, or I would like us to at least be talking about, is in events, how are you keeping the auction exciting? Because I will tell you, like, sometimes you go to auctions and it is the same stuff at every auction. And it's like, okay, I've got the taco basket. I've got the movie basket. I've got the sporting event tickets. How are you coming up with and keeping packages fresh so that it's something I want to invest in?
So at the forefront and top of the list are, what are items that somebody can't go out and buy right now? Mm-hmm. And those experiences, those, you know, we're having XYZ sporting player come do a dinner. And I know that's not always accessible to everyone, and I recognize that. But what are those experiences that you can't buy? You know, a committee member has a connection to a chef at this restaurant, and they offer a private dinner for 10 that they normally don't do in the restaurant. Like, creating those memorable moments that people want to bid on because they can't get access to it. And I think that's why people like trips so much, is I'm going into this person's Colorado home that they don't normally Airbnb, and I'm spending a week there skiing. That's really, you know, you've got to create those experiences that people can't buy.
Oh, I really like that. You're right. It is all about experiences. We are like in the experience generation, and the event itself is an experience. You are creating at your nonprofit event an experience for that donor from the minute they, you know, get out of their car, whether they're parking, it's valeted, or, you know, and they're having to walk a mile, or they're walking in the door, through the end of the evening and the thank you. I mean, it doesn't stop when you walk out the door. How do you use storytelling in your events? Because again, that's an integral part of the experience. Is it's yes, everyone wants to have a fun party, but also I want to hear why I'm here.
Yeah, we have implemented storytelling within the design and experience of the event. So one of the things I love is, you know, when somebody's coming up the escalator or up the elevator at our event, when they walk out, there's a vertical TV there, and it says, in the minute it took you to ride up the escalator or elevator, 24 calls were made to domestic violence hotlines around the country. They are immediately smack dab in the middle, given this is the mission. And as they walk down the hallway, there are stickers on the floor, decals that have statistics and data and programs we offer. And so as you're walking down, you are seeing how Newhouse is making an impact. And I've seen this at other events, like your storytelling before they've even gotten into the ballroom. And your programs, I mean, the program is so, so critical. What is the story you're telling? How are you integrating your mission into that experience where people are leaving thinking, I need to be involved with this agency? And so one of the takeaways that I have for people is really build out a solid run of show and determine how you're getting that message across of why this is so important, and why people need to invest in this nonprofit. You know, one of the things we've incorporated is, how are we telling the story of survivors of domestic violence in a ethical way that makes people feel empowered and say, you know what, like, I may not have experienced this, but I want to be a voice for those who have. So storytelling is really critical. And whether it's, you know, a children's museum, or it is a school fundraiser, or it's Big Brothers Big Sisters, like, how are we telling that story that pulls at people and also gives that sense of urgency?
So what I heard you say is some of Chris's big takeaways are, make sure that your committee understands what their role is, find the right role for those committee members, and make sure that clear is kind, they understand exactly what they're signing up for and where they might fit if that's not the right fit for them.
And give them a job description. Oh. We've built out committee job descriptions that say, this is kind of what we expect. And we give it to people ahead of time. And again, it gives them the opportunity to be like, nope, I don't think this is the right fit for me. And that's okay.
And something else we talked about is the experience is so important, but especially with the auction, have those unusual items, have those experiences that people want that they can't buy. And yes, that might take a little bit of extra work, but really utilize that committee by making those big asks and putting those feelers out there to get those unique items is what I also heard you say. And then storytelling. I mean, wow, you just really hit me when you were talking about us going up the escalator and being hit immediately. And how are you telling that story? And how cohesive is that story? So, Chris, those are great takeaways. Anything else that you think our listeners should hear before we sunset, at least on part one of events?
Right. Just continue to get out there and build those relationships. If you want that company involved, find employees who you think might be interested in the mission and start there. Cultivate the relationship.
And that's a wrap on this episode of The Giving Nook. I hope today's conversation gave you something, whether it's a fresh idea, a new perspective, or just a little more confidence in your fundraising journey. If you're loving what we're giving, be sure to hit subscribe so you don't miss what's next. And if you're feeling generous, a quick review helps more people like you find us. Want to keep the conversation going? Connect with me on LinkedIn or visit thephilanthropyplace.com, where I share fresh fundraising insights every other week. Here's to fundraising that feels good, works smarter, and changes lives. See you next time in The Giving Nook.